All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a chief warrant officer, helicopter pilot in Vietnam in 1969, United States Army, above the best. I want to welcome you to our program today. I'm really excited. We're going to be talking with it's kind of a book of contributors. And so we're going to be talking about a book entitled Beyond Belief, True Stories of American Heroes That Defy Comprehension. And I'm encouraging you to hunker down and listen to these stories. You're going to be amazed at what these ordinary men and women did in extraordinary times. And but before we get into the program directly, I want to make sure that we thank our faithful sponsors, and that would be the Legal Help for Veterans, the National Veterans Business Development Council, Eisenhower Center, VetBiz Central, and American Legion Post 46, VFW Post 423 and the VVA Charles S. Kettles Post 310, all of Ann Arbor, Michigan. You can learn much more about these organizations and the services that they provide at our website, veteransradio.net/our sponsors. And of course, we can't do that without them. I want to remind you out there, in this season of giving, as they call it, Veterans Radio is now a nonprofit 501c3 organization. And if you want to help us out with a little buddy money, you can go to the website again. That's veteransradio.net and click on the buddy money button. And we greatly appreciate any support that you can give us. Two organizations that I wanted to mention real quickly, again, during the season that we're into right now. Number one is going to be Toys for Tots. That's put on by the Marine Corps Foundation. I want to make sure that you help them out. They're providing toys for children all over the country, and you can find them on the website, of course, toysfortots.org, or you'll probably see some of their collection places around the county or around the state, wherever you happen to be. And the other one is Wreaths Across America, and these are green Christmas wreaths that are going to be put on the graves of America's veterans and soldiers across the country again. They're going to have a ceremony on December 19th. And for more information about Wreaths Across America, you can just go to their website, wreathsacrossamerica.org. These are two organizations that we are supporting, and we would encourage you to go to their websites and see if you can help them out. I want to get right into the first story here, and I'm going to bring on the authors, or one of the authors of the program, and actually the editor, I guess you could say. Good friend of Veterans Radio, and that is Doug Sterner. Doug, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Hey, it's good to be on with you again, Dale.
Thank you very much. Well, for those of you that are following military history and want to know all the history of awards and who received awards and so on and so forth, Doug is the guy. I don't know how many books that he has published regarding recipients of Silver Stars and Bronze Stars and Distinguished Flying Crosses and Medals of Honor and so on and so forth. But many of you may remember my talking with Doug a while ago about his Stolen Valor Act. He and his wife, Pamela, did this whole thing. How did you get started with this particular project?
Well, I actually started with this project first. The Stolen Valor came later because I started having people submitting citations to go into my database that were fraudulent. But I actually started this. I started a website in 1998, homeofheroes.com, which is now being carried on by Help for Veterans. And at the time, it was focused primarily on the Medal of Honor. And about 2 years into the project, people kept saying, well, what about these other awards, you know, Distinguished Service Crosses and Navy Crosses? And I said, yeah, it's great, but there's no way I would ever be able to compile all those. But I began to try, and in about 3 years I'd compiled most of them, and everybody was saying, well, what about the Silver Stars? And I said, well, that's impossible to do. But being the old Army combat engineer I am, SARs, we will try. And so I began doing that. And the Stolen Valor work came along ancillary to that. It was something I did rather grudgingly, because every time I had to deal with a Stolen Valor case, it took away valuable time that I could spend, you know, finding and transcribing the citation for real legitimate heroes.
Absolutely. And I know that that was a lot of hard work that you and your wife went through to even try and get the bill passed. And then they overruled it.
Well, they overruled it. There's a new one in effect. I'm kind of happily semi-retired from any Stolen Valor work. There's enough young bucks out there to carry on the work. And so, you know, I have tried to focus almost exclusively on building this database that I've been working on for more than 20 years now, because I'm uniquely suited to be able to do that. And I want to get as much of it done in my lifetime as I can.
Well, it's a great thing, and you've got, as I mentioned, you know, the Hall of Heroes has been kind of taken over by Legal Help for Veterans, at least helping to keep it going for you. And I know that you are involved with many, many more projects that are out there. I also wanted to bring on one of our other contributors right now, and that is Dwight Zimmerman. And Dwight is kind of a Medal of Honor historian himself. He wrote his own book about the Medal of Honor. In fact, the first one that wrote down the actual definition of it. He's been on Veterans Radio many, many times. You can go to our website, again, veteransradio.net, and just plug in Dwight Zimmerman under the search engine. And he did many book reviews for us and so on and so forth. But, Dwight, I want to welcome you back to the program as well.
Dale, thank you. It's great to be here again.
It's always great to be anywhere during this time period, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you got that part right.
Well, I wanted to make sure that I got both of you on. We are also going to have, I think it's three authors that contributed to this book. How did you get involved in it, Dwight?
Well, that was Doug. You know, he contacted me. You know, he had seen some of my articles that I did for Defense Media Network, because I did, for several years there, I did a World War II anniversary series, four articles each month. And this was as a result of me doing research for the New York Times Complete History of World War II. So having, you know, unlimited access to the New York Times archives, I was able to find all manner of material. So I was basically like a little kid in a candy store, seeing, the obvious big stories, but all so many fascinating small ones and odd ones. And I just, archived these things, and then later on was able to use them, you know, in the Defense Media Network. And Doug, you know, saw some of these things, contacted me, and said, could he use them in this compilation that he called Beyond Belief? And I said, God, yeah, by all means. And one thing led to another, and I wound up contributing three pieces from that. And then Doug had this one absolutely fabulous Christmas story of World War II that he was looking for a writer. And he asked me if I'd be interested, and he told me what it was, and I said, oh, God, I'd love to do this. And it's a rescue story. A German Luftwaffe fighter pilot had a chance to shoot down a B-17 crippled bomber that couldn't defend itself, and instead of shooting it down, he actually escorted it home to safety.
Wow. You know, it's amazing what sometimes you hear these stories of the enemy doing, humanistic types of things where they're helping out. And they, you know, it's like some people don't take advantage of a situation. And it's sort of like when you have, you know, something right in the sights and you don't pull the trigger. You say, well, this is not fair. You know, let me help these guys get home.
Yeah. And that was literally the case here. And the really great thing is 43 years later, the American pilot managed to get in touch with the German pilot. They met and they became fast friends.
Huh. I remember somebody else like that. Remember, Dwight was in the Military Writers Society, or he's one of the founders and was former president of it. And Jerry Yellen had a situation like that where he met a Zero pilot. Remember that story?
So many years have passed, unfortunately. The memory is vague, but yes, I do remember Jerry talking about it.
Yeah, Jerry was a fighter pilot as well in the Pacific, and didn't like the Japanese at all as a result of his experiences during World War II. And his son studied abroad, met a Japanese woman, decided he was going to marry this woman, and Jerry had to go to the wedding. And the wedding was held in Japan, and his wife had to convince him to go to the wedding. And he went there, and he met the bride's father, who happened to have been a Zero pilot during World War II. And they bonded, and actually the Japanese pilot told Jerry all about meditation and that he probably needed it. And if you, unfortunately, he passed away recently, but if you knew Jerry, you knew that he needed it. And the next thing you know, Jerry is at Maharani University out there in Iowa studying meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And convincing other veterans.
Yeah, he wrote an excellent account of that whole experience of, post-World War II, his son, relationship, engagement, and his travel. I read that thing and was very moved by it and how Jerry's attitudes changed over the years, as a result.
Well, I can tell you it was very helpful talking with Jerry, even for myself. And, I had my own issues, but, just the idea of calming yourself down and meditating a little bit. And that's kind of the theme that I see a lot of these stories that are in this compilation. We're talking right now with the editors of Beyond Belief, True Stories of American Heroes That Defy Comprehension, Doug Sterner and Dwight Zimmerman. But actually, I've got somebody on the line right now that was going to tell us one of her stories. And I'm going to ask you, Doug, to kind of introduce Hope. How did she get involved in this?
Well, and let me take you for a second to the whole concept behind the book, because I type all these citations every day. That's what I do, 12, 14 hours a day. I'd like to be a creative writer, but I'm just a transcriptionist. And I run across all of these fascinating citations, and I wish that I had the time to sit down and research them and write them as stories. But I don't want to take time away from doing my database work, so that's why I came up with the concept for this book. And one of the citations that has stuck in my mind, at the time I didn't even have a citation, just a synopsis based on news reports of an incident that happened in Washington, D.C., and it had a tremendous impact on my thought process, possibly because at about that same time, my son and daughter-in-law lost a baby, and I knew what they went through, and this particular story, I'm not going to give it away before Hope comes on, just had a strong impact on me. And I really wanted to include that story in the book. And someone else was going to write it, and then that fell through. And at the last minute, I went to Hope, and I said, would you be willing to do this story? And she said, well, yes. And, boy, she dug up some stuff. I was so excited and impressed when she got done with it. I made sure it was the very first story in the book.
It is. And joining us on the line right now is the managing editor for military.com, and that is Hope Hodgsek. And Hope, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. And so now we're going to let you tell your story about the miracle baby.
So this was an extraordinary treat for me. So much of the work that I do when I do get a chance to report is sort of, daily news things that are a flash in the pan or, something that you write about it one day and then the next day you're on to something else. That's probably the majority of the type of reporting that I do. So to really dig in and to, reach out to somebody like Colonel Richard Ouellette and just say, tell me your story and tell me everything you remember and the sights and the sounds and then just try to relive it was a really challenging exercise for me and a really special, exciting one too. And, to try to track down the people he encountered and find out as much as I could about the situation. And, to sort of summarize what happened. So, this Marine Colonel Richard Ouellette is, a legal officer. He's actually, I think the number two, legal officer in all the Marine Corps and the Navy at this point. And he's got, a desk job in the Navy Yard. And he goes out on his daily run, around mid-morning one day in June and encounters what looks like a runaway car that he's in by the Anacostia River, and it just goes, you know, off the roadway and then topples over into the water and is sinking. And so, you know, as he's watching this, all of a sudden he's in the water and he's reaching the car and he's making extraordinary efforts to rescue the passenger, who happens to be a woman who's 7 months pregnant, who's passed out. And so even talking about it now, the emotion of it comes back to me. It's clear it's never left him. And ultimately, because of him, the woman unfortunately died, but the baby, Courtney, was saved. And, you know, her life, she's now a 25-year-old woman, she owes to him. So being part of this was incredible, and I completely understand why the story stood out to Doug. It's so poignant.
Well, he had not heard from the daughter, Courtney, for a while until she reached out to him. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. And I worked really hard to try to get in touch with this family. In fact, I tracked down a number for her that she never ultimately answered. I knocked on doors. So that was a frustration for me. I would have loved to hear the story from their own words. But the admiration that Colonel Ouellette had for this family, it didn't end with the rescue, even though he was very humble and he sort of went back to his desk sopping wet and you know, carried on with his day until the news outlets found him. But he made a point of going to this woman's funeral with his wife, and the other people that day who were part of the rescue were there. And he, you know, worked hard to stay in touch with his family. And in fact, the husband and father will still send him cards, and this young woman, Courtney, reached out to him several times and, you know, has expressed her thanks and taken him to lunch. So it's a wonderful thing.
It's a heartwarming story, and I think it's a great way to bring, you know, to start off this collection of amazing stories. And Hope, I want to thank you for giving us the time and telling your story. By the way, Colonel Ouellette received the Navy and Marine Corps Medal for bravery above and beyond in a non-combat situation. So I thought that was really probably very special to him too.
I would say just one more thing about that, and that is that his Marine Corps training, he expressed to me that, you know, his career had never kind of put him in the thick of things. You know, he had never really had a chance to prove his medal in a firefight, you know, the typical things that we see service members receiving awards for. But clearly, he was trained in his strength of character, you know, from his military training and who he was. It was just waiting in reserve. And so this moment arose when he was just out on a run in Washington, D.C., and that was his time to be a hero, and he rose to the challenge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Hope, I want to thank you very much for being on the program. And I'm hoping to talk to you again real soon. This is Hope Hodge-Seck from military.com. I encourage you to go to military.com and check out some of her other articles. It's really fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right. Unfortunately, we got to take a real quick break here. But when we come back, we're going to be talking with Doug and Dwight about Beyond Belief, True Stories of American Heroes That Defy Comprehension. I'm going to ask each one of them to talk about one of their favorite stories that they contributed to it. So we will be back shortly. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we'll be right back.
Are you a veteran or a military spouse interested in starting or growing an existing business? Then you want to connect with VetBiz Central, Michigan's only veteran business resource center, providing free one-on-one business counseling services, including research plans and preparing veterans to be lender ready. If you're in business, VetBiz Central offers comprehensive strategic marketing strategies to help you connect to corporations. They are one of 20 centers nationwide devoted to veteran business development through the U.S. Small Business Administration Office of Veteran Business Development. Vets helping vets. Visit their website at VetBizCentral.org or call 810-767-VETS.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and that little bump music there is Thunderer by Sousa March, actually. We're talking here today with Doug Sterner and Dwight Zimmerman about a book of stories about amazing men throughout history who have done amazing things. And so I wanted to ask each one of them. The book is Beyond Belief, True Stories of America's Heroes. Doug, what is one of your favorite stories in this particular version or edition?
Well, I loved all of them. And, you know, we have all these stories about Medal of Honor recipients, and we sometimes forget that there's other heroes out there that didn't get the Medal of Honor. Sometimes the only difference between a Distinguished Service Cross and a Medal of Honor is the ability of the clerk to type up the recommendation. And one of my absolute favorites, I mean, Colonel Ouellette's story, just I'll never forget that one. That was probably my favorite, but the other one that I just loved was the last story to come in. I was antsy and waiting for it to come in, and that's about a fellow by the name of Damon Rocky Gauss. And I don't know if you have the author, Bobby Ragsdale. Is he going to be on the show today?
No, not today. I was not able to get a hold of him.
I didn't want to take away his thunder.
No, well, you can right now.
Did an amazing job. He wrote a book within a book. Damon Gauss, at the fall of Corregidor, rather than surrender, swam to the mainland, escaped and evaded, moved all the way down to the south part of Manila Harbor. There he met an Army Air Forces officer. Damon was Air Force. He met an Army officer who had also evaded. The two men got a 20-foot wooden boat with an old diesel engine. All they had for a map was an old issue of National Geographic, and they sailed that 20-foot boat, sometimes under fire, all the way to Australia.
Wow. Yeah, and that was one of my favorite stories as well. It's entitled The Slow Boat to Australia. And it was funny, I was in a store earlier this morning, and they had a globe, and I was looking at the globe, and I'm going, I don't know, I guess because I was in Vietnam and my dad had been in Iwo Jima, and I was looking at, wow, we were pretty close together there. And then I look way down there, and there's Australia, and I'm going, how did these guys do this? I mean, how many thousands of miles that voyage must have been?
Yes, amazing.
You know, as you mentioned, they did. They came under fire. The boat would break. They'd fix the boat. They'd island hop their way down there. And I can't remember exactly how long it took them.
Yeah. But at one point, they were strafed in the open water by a Japanese plane. And one of them was bailing water out of the boat while the other one went overboard and started shoving cork up into the bullet holes in the bottom of the boat.
Is it? This has to be a movie somewhere, wouldn't you think?
Well, I like the old man ran across the citation because both men were awarded the Distinguished Service Cross on the spot by General MacArthur. And when I tumbled to the citation, I did do a little bit more research. And Damon Gauss, who died in World War II, was a test pilot in England, and he was killed after that amazing, you know, rescue. Decades later, in the 1990s, his son published his father's war journal, the War Journal of Raymond Rocky Gauss, which is actually available online. And I have always considered it probably the best first-person narrative of a war story that I've ever read. And so that story was just always near and dear to me. And when Bobby Ragsdale took that on, I was just really pleased, and he did an amazing job.
Well, it is an amazing story. It's just, you know, this one is entitled The Slow Boat to Australia. And these two men that, you know, months, I'm looking at the story right now, it says 195 days, basically, when it took them to get back to Bataan, and they walked into General MacArthur's office, saluted and announced, "Sir, Lieutenant Gauss reports for duty."
MacArthur looked at him and said, well, I'll be damned.
Yep, absolutely. Dwight, have you got one you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, Doug, can you hear me?
Yep, I can.
Oh, okay. Well, as Doug said, I enjoyed all of them because the strength of this book is its wide range of stories. You know, you have the, you know, the extraordinary combat tales, you know, but then, you know, then you have, such things as, you know, these animal heroes, Cher-Ami, carrier pigeon from World War I, Chips, the war dog, from in World War II. That's one I wrote. And then, this wonderful story by Scott Barron, Marine Staff Sergeant Reckless, a horse in, Korea. Yeah, and then, you know, this really amazing, you know, tale about a 5-year-old prisoner of war. You know, this girl.
I think we're losing you, Doug. Did we lose him?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. You're back now. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So,
I'm sorry.
So you had a little 5-year-old girl who was taken a prisoner of war?
There's this 5-year-old girl. She was the daughter of missionaries. And, her parents were captured by the North Vietnamese, and, this is told from her point of view as a, you know, when, she wrote a journal during that time. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Doug, but, you know, it's just an amazing story. So this is where I wanted to say that the strength of the book is its wide range of topics. It's not just combat situations and heroic rescues. It's, you know, it covers a gamut. You know, for me, I have to say of the ones that I wrote, the most amazing one was the story of Marine Colonel Peter J. Ortiz, who served in the OSS in World War II. His career was a combination of Errol Flynn, Chesty Puller, and he started out, you know, in the French Foreign Legion, was captured in 1940 by the Germans, escaped, got over to the United States, wound up enlisting in the Marines, then got signed on by the OSS. He earned 2 Navy Crosses, the French Croix de Guerre, the Legion d'Honneur, and was decorated by England as well. He had a Hollywood career. There were 2 movies that were produced that were based on his career, and the first one starred James Cagney, who portrayed Ortiz. Everything about this was just absolutely jaw-dropping when I was doing the research.
I would think so. That was one. I enjoyed this one because he was compared, as you mentioned, to Errol Flynn, Chesty Puller, and to James Bond, because, you know, he was evidently a good looking, you know, man, and he's undercover and he's in the OSS and he's going behind enemy lines and doing all of these, you know, amazing things that they had to do. So
the
OSS.
The best story there was when he confronted, in German soldiers, the officers who had been disparaging FDR, the Marine Corps, the OSS, and Ortiz. He had been sitting there, in a civilian guise, in the bar, and after a while, he just said, "Well, I've had enough of hearing that, their their crap."
Push the button.
he went back into his safe house, put on his uniform. That was the other amazing thing. He wore his Marine uniform complete with decorations. This was to inspire the French resistance fighters. Went back to the bar with his Colt 45s, took off his trench coat, aimed his 45s at them and ordered them to do toasts to FDR, the Marine Corps, and to him.
These stories are great. We're talking with two of the authors, Beyond Belief, The True Stories of American Heroes That Defy Comprehension. Joining us on the line right now is we've got Colin Kimball, and he wrote a great story. Well, I'll let him do that. Colin, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I wrote about Lance Saijon. Lance is the only Air Force Academy alumnus to earn the Medal of Honor, and his story is of incredible endurance of basically living in the jungle for 45 days with a compound fractured leg, a broken hand, a mangled hand, and a severe concussion. And all he could do is drag himself on his hind end. And he was able to live for about 45 days before he passed out on the road that he was trying to bomb and got captured by the North Vietnamese, tortured. But yet he still tried to escape numerous times as a POW. He just an incredible story of a man who was totally dedicated himself to the Warrior's Code.
Well, he was a very interesting young man, and he went into the academy, the Air Force Academy, kind of the hard way. He had to go through a prep school to get in, which in your story, I had not realized this, sort of like a year-long basic training camp to get them in. Ended up being a pilot, was an athlete, all these other different things. And the interesting part is that he had tried to, everywhere he got captured, he kept trying to escape, almost up to the end of his life.
Yeah, he, even with the severe injuries that he suffered and the emaciated condition of his body, when he was initially captured by the North Vietnamese, he was held in a jungle camp. He was able to cold cock one of the North Vietnamese guards and scoot out on his hind end, and then got recaptured. And then when he was captured, finally when they decided to take him to Hanoi, and he was then put in care of, let me backtrack. He was actually taken to another temporary facility, I think near Vinh, North Vietnam. And he was in a cell near some Americans that were ultimately made his caretakers. And even then, he was trying to scoot out of his cell, and the North Vietnamese guards were beating him with a stick to get him back in. He never gave up. I guess the one thing about Lance Saijon is he never gave up.
No, he certainly never gave up, and unfortunately, he did die in captivity. But he was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously, and he to read the citation. And I'd encourage our audience to go to the Medal of Honor website, or to Doug's website, or to other things. His name is Lance Saijon. Is it Sijan?
That's correct.
It's not one that we have recorded, but this is one we have to record. This is great. But the other thing about his story was how he got captured because of the bureaucracy in the military. Sometimes they were using a weapon that was not safe at all.
Yes, that's the sad part of the story. They were carrying a munition 750-pound bomb that had a fuse in it that was designed to delay the detonation of the bomb for tens of minutes to several hours after it impacted the ground. The idea is they were dropping these along the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and the North Vietnamese obviously would scatter, move their trucks off the road whenever they heard any aircraft, and these aircraft would drop these bombs on the trail. They would impact the roadway and sit there, and then, the enemy would probably think, well, these are duds. Let's get the show back on the road. Let's get these trucks moving. And then as the trucks were moving back down the road, they would just start randomly popping off at different time intervals. well after the aircraft had departed the area. Unfortunately, the manufacturing defect in these fuses were causing these munitions to detonate immediately upon the release from the aircraft. And so the munitions that these aircraft were carrying were basically blowing these F-4 Phantoms out of the sky. And we lost quite a few men, unfortunately, from that process.
In your story, you mentioned that they lost something like 9 aircraft, and I think it was that John was the only one that survived.
Yeah, there was another pilot. I think his last name was Mo. He actually, the last two air crews that went out to launch these munitions or to drop these munitions, and it was about mid-January. They knew, they had a feeling that these munitions were bad, and so they decided to pitch up as they released the bombs. Therefore, once the weapons separated, there was a little bit of a distance, giving these guys maybe a fighting chance to eject. And sure enough, these weapons, these bombs, you know, blew up, and the Phantoms blew out of the sky. Anyways, the air crew for both of these Phantoms were able to eject. 3 of them were rescued and debriefed, and at that point they confirmed that these bombs were exploding upon release. One of the air crew, one of the pilots was captured. He came home from the war in 1973, but it was that episode that finally caused the Air Force to say, you know what, enough is enough. We're going to stop using these fuses.
Yeah, good idea. I brought Colin Kimball on to talk about Lance Sejan, not only about his story, but also about another project that you do, and that is that you paint portraits of these many Medal of Honor recipients that were awarded these awards posthumously. Is that correct?
That is correct. I started back in 2013 in the local courthouse here in Collin County, which is a county just to the north. We're in McKinney, Texas, a suburb of Dallas. I started putting portraits of our fallen warriors from our county in our courthouse, and I finally got about 79 portraits over the years that are on permanent display. And in this process, I started working on Medal of Honor recipients. Our courthouse, one of our fallen warriors is a gentleman by the name of Russell Steindom, and he got a posthumous Medal of Honor in Vietnam. And we were able to actually convince the county commissioners to rename the courthouse in his honor. And learning about, there's a vast number of Medal of Honor recipients that nobody knows about because they didn't get to wear the medal because they earned it by losing their life. And
right.
So my goal is to tell those stories. And so I have been working on assembling a collection. I've got about 75 portraits I've completed to date of posthumous Medal of Honor recipients. I've completed every single posthumous Medal of Honor recipient that served in the Air Force, which was the branch that I served in. I like to tell people that I wasn't in the military. I was an enlisted man in a peacetime United States Air Force. But
you're doing a great thing with this. And I want to have you back on the program to talk about that project specifically. Please let us do that. So I thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. This is Colin Kimball. You'll be able to find out more information if you go to our website, veteransradio.net, and we're going to have a link to him on there. Thank you very much. And speaking of Medal of Honor, we're going to take a quick break right now and play our version of Medal of Honor here. Today's Medal of Honor is dedicated to Major Kevin Knave, the United States Marine Corps, by the Fretz Family Foundation. Eric Fretz, made a donation to sponsor today's Medal of Honor. We'll be right back after this.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Navy Captain James Stockdale inflicted a near-fatal wound to himself to show his willingness to die rather than divulge information. Details after this. Stockdale was recognized by the North Vietnamese as the leader in the prisoners of war resistance to interrogation and in their refusal to participate in propaganda exploitation. Sensing the start of another purge and aware that his earlier efforts at self-disfiguration to dissuade his captors from exploiting him for propaganda purposes had resulted in cruel and agonizing punishment, Stockdale resolved to make himself a symbol of resistance regardless of personal sacrifice. He deliberately inflicted a near-mortal wound to his person in order to convince his captors of his willingness to give up his life rather than capitulate. He was subsequently discovered and revived by the North Vietnamese, who, convinced of his indomitable spirit, abated in their employment of excessive harassment and torture toward all of the prisoners of war. Upon release from the captivity, he was promoted to Rear Admiral.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Hi, this is Kid Rock. Thousands of veterans are homeless and living on the streets of our nation tonight. Streets where they're being beaten, robbed, even killed. Let's take care of our own. Please join me in housing 1,000 veterans as fast as possible. Make a pledge to VeteransMatter.org. Text VETS to 41444 and pledge any amount. They fought for us. Now we fight for them. Veterans Matter.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And that's a continuation of Thunderer. John Philip Sousa. We're back here on Veterans Radio, and we're talking about a book that I was sent, thankfully, entitled Beyond Belief, True Stories of American Heroes That Defy Comprehension. And we've heard some amazing stories already today. On the line with us are Doug Sterner and Dwight Zimmerman, but also I have another guest on the line, and that is Scott Barron. And Scott is one of the contributors to the book, a couple of stories that he put in there. Scott, I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we've been talking about some of these great stories here, and I asked you to choose your favorite. So which one did you want to talk about today?
Well, you know, what's interesting is Doug and I have written for years about valor of American servicemen. But the stories that always seem to really catch my attention, when we think of heroes, we think of the guy that kills a lot of people. But there's a lot of heroes that basically become heroes for saving lives. And you would think an unlikely hero would be a prisoner of war, but that's the story I decided to choose today. It's the story of Douglas Hegdahl, who the Vietnamese called the incredibly stupid one.
And, tell us about Douglas. Even his capture was unusual.
Oh, it's a remarkable story. But when you think about it, here's a man as a prisoner of war who ends up saving probably countless, more than 300 lives. And he does it by feigning to be an idiot and committing an act which many people who weren't informed considered to be treason. So you have to picture, here's this farm boy. He's from South Dakota, never been east of Minnesota, never been west of Phoenix. He graduates high school. The Vietnam War is going on. He says, I want to see the world. So he joins the Navy, and they put him aboard the USS Canberra, and he ends up in the Gulf of Tonkin in April of 1967. Really at the height of this Vietnam War. And they're on a fire mission in the Gulf of Tonkin. And he, I think he was a mail clerk aboard the ship at the time. He wanted to be a gunner's mate. But he wanted to see the fireworks. He wanted to see them blowing up things. So he decides to go on deck, which they advise against because of the concussion from these big guns that are doing this fire mission. Well, as it happens, the concussion knocks him overboard into the water, and the crew is unaware of the fact that they have a man overboard, and they sail on, and he's a really, really good swimmer, so he manages to stay afloat for about 12 hours until he's rescued by a Vietnamese fishing boat. And they take him to shore and, of course, turn him over to the Vietnamese, North Vietnamese authorities. And he ends up in the Hanoi Hilton. And at first, they think the guy's a CIA spy. He has no ID. He's only got the clothes on his back. And they say, no, you know, your story is just not believable. And they beat the hell out of the guy several times. So he decides the best way to deal with it, I'm sure you've heard the expression plain stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he decides to do. He decides to play it stupid, and he manages to convince him that he's an idiot, a fool, illiterate. And they say, well, we'd like you to make, you know, some statements. And he cooperates. He says, yeah, you know, I'll be happy to help you. But he pretends he's illiterate, so he can't read the statements they give him. And they even go as far as to get him a teacher to try to teach him how to read and write. And finally, after a few weeks, they give up and they say, no, this guy's hopeless. That's where he gets the name of the incredibly stupid one. And so they put him to work, figuring he's a harmless idiot, sweeping the prison grounds a couple hours a day, giving him significant freedom of movement because he's an idiot. Well, he's able to not only gather information, but he's also able to commit small acts of sabotage, like he puts dirt down the gas tanks of some of the trucks, totally destroying them. And to humiliate the senior prisoner, a guy by the name of Lieutenant Commander Richard Stratton, they make him his cellmate. So here you've got the senior officer and the most junior officer. There weren't a lot of enlisted men, especially in 1967, before the ground war really got going, that were prisoners of war. So you've got the highest ranking and the lowest ranking. But what makes Douglas Hegdahl's story so interesting is he has an extraordinary memory. And so they put him to work memorizing the names of over 256 prisoners of war. Now, you have to understand, at this point in the war, the North Vietnamese did not consider the people they had in as prisoners of war. They considered them war criminals. And so they didn't obey the Geneva Convention. They didn't notify the U.S. government of who they had as prisoners of war, and they committed torture and brutal acts on these people that would have been in violation of the Geneva Convention. Well, all the people back home, they don't know what happened to their loved ones. They don't know if they're missing. They don't know if they're dead. And the families are getting no information from the government because the government's getting no information from the North Vietnamese. Well, anyway, he learns through mnemonics to memorize not only the names, but the capture dates and personal information on these 256 prisoners of war. And he does it by memorizing them to the sound or the song of Old MacDonald Had a Farm, which is remarkable. Well, they had made a pact, all the prisoners of war, of no go home early. Nobody was going to go home unless everybody goes home. But the North Vietnamese, for propaganda purposes, wanted to release prisoners, and they would. They would release them in groups of three. Well, Hegdahl doesn't want to go because he doesn't want to be considered a traitor. He doesn't want to be considered treasonous. But he is persuaded, well, actually, he's ordered by Captain Stratton to take an early release. And he and two others are released. And they come back to the United States. And he is able to provide the government with the names, the dates, and the personal information of these 256 captives, which means the 256 families now know what happened to their loved ones, that they're not dead, that they're actually prisoners of war. He also knows the locations of the prisoner of war camps, and he can testify firsthand to the type of torture that is going on and the terrible conditions that they are being held in. And this one point, I love one story where they're talking to him and he's just rattling off the names and they say, you know, slow down. He says, I can't slow down. He learned it one way, and so he basically just rattled off these 256 names and information. Well, he's discharged from the Navy, but I believe it was, oh gosh, I can't think of the rich millionaire. Anyway, he goes to the Paris peace talks and basically calls out the North Vietnamese, saying, you know, you guys have been torturing us, and makes the names public. And Captain Stratton will say later, he'll say, thanks to Doug, despite the scars on my body, the communists had to produce me alive at the end of the war. The incredibly stupid one is my personal hero. He's the archetype of an innovative, resourceful, and courageous American sailor. And after the war, they put him to work in San Diego, teaching at the survival, escape, resistance, and evasion course. And up to this day, you can interview Doug, and he can still, all these years later, recite the 256 names of those prisoners.
Well, I think we got to figure out a way to get him on this program. We're coming up on it. And the other thing is that he was put in for a certain number of medals, but evidently, has he ever been approved for these awards?
That's what I was just going to mention. What we really need to do is get a movement to get him recognized. They recommended him for a lot of different medals, the Navy and Marine Corps Medal, the Silver Star Medal, the Bronze Star Medal, with the Combat V, the Navy Commendation Medal. But the Navy, in its wisdom, decided that he did not merit these awards. And to the best of my knowledge, the only award he's been given was the Prisoner of War Medal. So if we really want to start a movement, I think that would be a movement worthy, because he took a lot of flack for taking an early release.
Sure, absolutely.
He's a very modest man, but I think he's deserving of recognition.
I couldn't agree more, Scott. And I want to thank you very much for being on the program. This has gone by really fast today. Scott Barron is one of the contributors to Beyond Belief, the true stories of American heroes that defy comprehension. Thanks so much for being on the program, Scott. I will be in touch with you to see what we can, maybe we can tell this story in a little bit longer version. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. All right, Doug and Dwight, I appreciate you, being on the phone while we're listening to these other stories. We got about 3.5 minutes, it looks like, to go. Doug, how'd you like to end this today?
Well, listen, while you got Dwight on here, I want to say that this book kind of is one of the things that kind of gave me new hope. I'm a busy man, and I always wished I had more time to write, and I've always said, I wish I could clone myself. And I didn't realize that out there was a younger, smarter, better version of me already. And so meeting Dwight was just a godsend. He's working on another book that I suggested, and we're going to be doing more copies or more editions of the Beyond Belief books. And if any of your listeners want to be a writer or want to be involved, they can feel free to contact me on Facebook. I'll add them to the group, because we're going to start trying to put out 2 every year.
Okay, and that's great, Doug. I want to thank you very much for what you do, and I'm excited to read even more of these. So let me know every time a new one comes out.
I'll do it.
All right. Dwight, I'll give you the last word as our guest today. How was this experience for you?
It was great. I was so happy and proud and humbled, you know, when Doug contacted me. And it's been a wonderful experience, and Doug and I have kicked around some ideas for the first sequel. And we'll see how it all, you know, comes together. But there are a heck of a lot of stories out there that haven't been told, you know, or told well enough, or to a big enough audience. I'm hoping that we get a good enough reception that this kicks off to be a really great line of military stories.
Well, I think so, and I know that you and Doug are working on a book on women in combat and the awards that they receive that we don't know anything about. And this is kind of, you know, your mission. It's our mission here at Veterans Radio to tell these stories, and that's what we're going to continue doing. So, Dwight, Doug, thank you both very much for being on the program. It's always a pleasure to talk with both of you men, and I'm looking forward to your next adventure. So thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right. So with another Veterans Radio, we're wrapping up another program. I want to encourage you, as I mentioned before, to support the Toys for Tots and Wreaths Across America. If you have any comments about Veterans Radio, please go to our website, veteransradio.net, and put them down there, what you felt about today's program or programs that you would like to do. Or as Doug and Dwight pointed out, if you want to get involved with Veterans Radio, we're always looking for contributors, and we also need your support. So if you go into veteransradio.net/support us, some buddy money would help us keep the program going and maybe end up in a station near you. So until next week, this is Dale Thronberry for Veterans Radio. You are dismissed.